Okay, welcome everybody to the afternoon session of day two. Again, we had such a wonderful lunch, isn't it? Yeah, I think this is the best retreat prasadam I've ever actually had. Yes, all glories to Ananta Prabhu and his kitchen team. Yes, so tasty and so nice variety and light, nothing oily, greasy. Very nice, simply wonderful. Okay, so let us maybe start immediately with our role plays. Yeah, those of you who haven't offered your flowers yet, you may quickly do so because we have done this already and once we start, there will not be much opportunity. Yes, we had the men's group in Japa, right? So we'll start with the Japa group. Group two. You're missing.
Can Marco be a replacement? No, I was already. We're missing one person.
It's okay. Just
so what happened?
I don't know.
He pooped out, how we say.
I just need one more person.
So what are you going to do?
Mark, can you join us, please? It's really simple. Oh, there we are.
What do I have to do?
Jagat Prasu is not in any group.
Yeah, we are.
Jagat Prasu is not in any group.
Jagat Prasu, come.
Yes, Prasad. Shukatri.
There, the doors opening. Is it? Are they those two who are missing? No.
Okay, I'll just explain him shortly. Can you go to your position?
Okay, so group number two is just now getting ready. And they're going to show us the empty capsule in Japa. We start with the empty capsule, we finish with the full capsule.
So, even if we can practice Krishna consciousness for 30 years, we have to understand what is actually happening in our minds when we are chanting. So let's observe these three situations. Let's observe these three situations to understand what is actually empty capsule and what is full. I am representing the mind of the person. Oh, I have to chant the holy name. I have to chant the holy name. Oh, yes. Chanting. Oh, this takes too long. What is use of it? Maybe if I concentrate on the sound, everybody knows that the biggest advancement is made by service. Yeah, but not any service. Sankirtan Yagya. let me pray for that. Please, Krishna, let me give lots of your books. Please, Krishna, let me give you lots of your books. Please, Krishna, give me lots of your books. Yes?
Nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Hey, Krishna, how are you? And so you're wearing purple today? You're wearing jewels again? It's okay, I guess. We had this last week. Nothing new, I guess. There is something very nice cooking in the kitchen. For you, of course. What new service I can do for you, Krishna? A new program? Maybe new temple? How can I serve you? I know. Maybe new bhakti pizza place in the center. Oh, yes. I'm so full of bhakti. Yeah. So, let's see how this is going to be after this holy name retreat. please, Krishna, I am helpless without you. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, I need you, Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna, please come, please, pick me up from this material world and put me on your lotus feet. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh Radha, oh Krishna, oh Gaura Nitai, you look so beautiful. I'm your eternal servant. Hare Krishna, please release me from Maya and forgetfulness from you. Oh, your hands are so mighty, it gives pleasure to every living being. Oh, please, let me, my mind be always meditating on you. Hey, Krishna, hey, Krishna, 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 hey, 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 Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Please, Krishna, accept me. Hare Ram, Hare Ram. I'm your servant. Please engage me as you wish. Hare Ram. Please, let me be part of your plans. Don't let my mind and ego interrupt with your plans. Hare Ram. Please, Radharani, engage me in your loving service to the Lord. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna.
Should I sing? Maybe this one. Why am I not feeling any pleasure? This is getting boring. Maybe I should try another melody. Yeah, I will try this one.
Actually, it's not so good to pump this without pressing.
Sorry, I just didn't want to ruin the harmonium. So you can pretend or you play properly, as you like. just pretend. Yeah. You don't.
Thank
you. Sorry. Start again.
Yeah. Which melody should I sing? Maybe this one. Oh, why am I not feeling any pleasure? This is getting really boring. Maybe I should try another melody. Yeah, I will try this one. Still no taste. I'm singing this for many years already. Still nothing. Let me check what's the time. Oh, I'm singing only for 10 minutes. Is another Kirtaniya already here? No? Oh, that means I will have to sing much longer.
What about me, my dear soul? You forgot about me. So many lives. You've been stuck with this crazy mind. Give it up already. And sing with all of me for the pleasure of your most dear friend who is patiently waiting for you forever.
So let's see what tomorrow the groups will bring with the poisonous capsule we will discuss during the morning. Okay, so now, how did you like your flower picking exercise? Yeah, you liked it? Yes. Could you feel that there's something happening in the heart when we really make this endeavor and we look for something nice for Krishna? Right? Yes, yes. I mean, this is actually how we should offer everything. You know, even in arti, it should not just be mechanical. Or at Prabhupada Guru Puja, we just grab the petals three times around, boom, finish. Yeah? That kind of offering will not transform the heart, actually. You know, we are so mechanical and unconscious in our ways of practice, but if we actually really go and we look for something nice and then we offer it to the Lord, it really does something to the heart, you know? Yes, yes, yes. Actually, anybody of you has ever been to Simhachalam in Germany? There is the Pujari, Ramananda Das. I really like the way he offers the artis, you know. I've never seen anywhere else the Pujari offering in that style, you know. He really leans forward and in a really personal way he's offering it to the Lord, you know. You can see there is actually some consciousness there, some mindfulness. He really offers things from the heart, not just standing there doing his thing. You know, it's quite amazing, huh? You've watched him? Yeah. And I mean, really, the whole community is so surcharged by his way, how he worships Lord Nrisimhadev. Lord Nrisimhadev is really the center of the community. It's a small community. There's only, you know, 30, 35 people living on the property. But they all come to Mangalarti every day. Yeah, I was amazed, you know. And then every Saturday they have a special yagya for Lord Nrisimhadev. Every Sunday they have, with open curtains, some abhishek for the big Lord Nrisimhadev. So, I mean, there's really, he's really putting his heart in, and it affects the whole community. It's like contagious, you know. Everybody gets washed away in his mood of worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev. So it's very, very nice. Okay, so we have a few little topics for this afternoon. So let us remember this morning the main topic was chanting the holy name with the awareness of a relationship. Mindfully turning towards Krishna, calling out to him, Krishna, I know you are there. This is kind of my little formula. Krishna, I know you are there. You know, and as soon as the mind wanders off, this is how we can bring the mind back. I know you are there, Krishna. Yes, I know. Please accept me. Like that. So, and we were saying this kind of chanting actually establishes our relationship with Krishna. And only this kind of chanting. Empty capsule will not do anything, as we saw in the role plays. No satisfaction, no effect. In this way, it's interesting to understand how actually the chanting of the pure holy name is establishing personalism, actually. And it is destroying this impersonal mentality in the hearts of people. As we all know, we have in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can read how actually Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established the Sankirtan mission. This did not take place through debate and argument and defeating philosophically, but it actually happened through chanting the holy name. And as we all know, in Shiva's Thakur's house, behind closed curtains or closed doors, that's where Mahaprabhu was meeting for 1 year in his confidential Sankirtan pastimes with his close associates. Only those were allowed to take part who were really close associates. And for a whole year, these Sankirtan pastimes took place. So it was basically Mahaprabhu's holy name retreat for 1 year. Not just 3 days or 3.5 days what we are having here, but for a whole year. So a holy name retreat, nothing new. Already Mahaprabhu did it. And only after that, Mahaprabhu took the holy name in the public, in the street. First around Navadvip, then all around Sodhinya. So I think this is already, making the point how important it is to deeply establish the pure chanting first in our hearts. Because we can only give to others what we have. And Prabhupada was always telling us, purity is the force. So the pure chanting has to be deeply established in our hearts. And then we can actually give Krishna to others through the chanting. But otherwise, our Harinam is easily, it may become just a performance, a show, with no spiritual power, no Shakti behind it. So purity is the force. And Mahaprabhu established that by first for a whole year, spending time in deeply establishing the pure chanting. And only then he took it out through the streets. So and then when he traveled around South India, Benares, Varanasi, was like the headquarters of the Mayavadis. Right? There was all these Mayavadi sannyasis there. And when Mahaprabhu was chanting there in the streets and dancing, this was so revolutionary. No sannyasi had ever done this before, ever. In those days, the occupation, so to speak, of sannyasis was simply to debate, philosophical debate, and winning the debates. That's all they were doing. So Mahaprabhu did something so revolutionary, we don't even realize, because now it's not so revolutionary. Every sannyasi goes in the street and chants and dance. But in those days, it was something completely unusual. And as we all know, the story goes, that Prakashananda Saraswati, he was one of the leading Mayavadis there. He was asking Mahaprabhu, so what is this? This dancing and chanting looks so sentimental. What kind of sannyasi are you? Why are you doing this? And then Mahaprabhu was answering, yes, my spiritual master told me I am a fool. You just chant the holy name and dance. You're a fool. And of course we know he's not a fool because he also had these pastimes of Nimai Pandit where he was winning all the debates. We know that also. But in any case, and then as he continued simply chanting and dancing and by his pure, heart with his deep humility, taking a low seat there outside near the dirt and so on, that's how he conquered these Mayavadi sannyasis' hearts. He actually transformed them. Many became his disciples, his followers. So this just shows the power of the holy name, that the pure chanting kills this Mayavad tendency in our hearts, this Nirvishesha Shunyavadi tendency. right? Yes, just by chanting, not debating and arguing and philosophically convincing, and no, simply by chanting. And actually, Prabhupada did exactly the same. When he started ISKCON, you know, New York was like the Mayavadi headquarters. It was like the Benares of South India. And all the hippies, flower power, you know, that was, they were all Mayavadis. Nobody believed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No. It was all, you know, LSD, taking all kinds of hallucinating drugs, and the idea was that will elevate your consciousness. Carlos Castaneda was the guru. He was preaching about the magic mushrooms and all these kind of things. Probably the elder generation here may have heard Carlos Castaneda. Yeah, so that was the go. Nobody believed in some little personality who, you know, plays the flute and herds the cows or something, and he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, come on, you know. So, and that's why Prabhupada did exactly the same, like Mahaprabhu. He did not convince these hippies and Mayavadis through philosophical arguments and debating. All he did was chanted the holy name, purely. And we may have seen the pictures or the video clips, you know, with Prabhupada in the park chanting. I mean, Prabhupada didn't even use so many amazing tunes or something. He kept things just so simple, you know. And then concentrated devotion with closed eyes, very grave and sober. He was simply chanting and chanting. And this was just so attractive to all these hippies and young people, you know, that the word got around. Yeah, there is Swamiji from India and he's doing this chant. Come and tune into the chant. And all these people came, you know, and tuned in and basically copied Prabhupada, you know. They did simply what Prabhupada did. All right, with closed eyes, swinging back and forwards. That's how Swamiji does it. So let's do it the same, you know. And then gradually Prabhupada got up and introduced the dancing. Not immediately, a little later. Swami step, raised hands, you know. And everybody thought, okay, Swamiji is doing this now. Let's follow him. So that's how it all started. People had no clue what this, you know, esoteric meaning of the Maha Mantra is or anything. But they simply were conquered by that pure chanting. And that actually killed that Mayavadi tendency in people's hearts. That established personalism. So in the same way, the same principle is also there on our personal level. It's there on the level of Mahaprabhu. It's there in the level of Prabhupada. But also we, in our hearts, we can kill this impersonalism, this Mayavad tendency, which we, by the way, all have a little bit. You know, it is still there. It is still there. It's still lingering there. The odor, the smell is still there. You know, like you have an asfetida container, and even though there's no more asfetida in there, but oh, you can smell what was in there before. You know, no secret. So it's a bit like that. You know, we may have understood, okay, Krishna is a person. But still, that Mayavadi odor, that Mayavadi smell, is still hanging around there. Because we have not yet deeply established that pure chanting. That actually kills that impersonal spirit. And that deeply establishes personalism, actually. That's another interesting thing, you know, that sometimes we hear these complaints, oh, you know, people are so impersonal, ISKCON is so impersonal, and again, solution is what's happening there with all these papers going back and forth. Can I have it too? Is it for me? Some question? No? It is question. Okay, so, but let's park it, you know? We probably have time for a little question. This afternoon, we're not going to talk so much again. Yeah, so, the real solution to this tendency for impersonalism is actually, once again, the pure chanting of the holy name. Because this is an interesting and quite profound point, that true personalism actually has to be established, it has to be based on our relationship with Krishna. So if our relationship with Krishna more tangibly manifests, only then we can be truly personal. Because only then we can see each and every person as spirit soul, as part and parcel of Krishna. Right? And then we can be truly equal to all. Because we understand every living entity is so dear to Krishna. You know, who are we to reject or be inimical and this and that? You know? So only through the pure chanting, when our relationship with Krishna establishes more and more, that gets us beyond the friend-enemy platform, the platform of duality. I like this person, I don't like that person. That's duality, right? But if that pure chanting is established in our hearts, then we can conquer over that. Because we have that vision of each and every living entity being part and parcel of Krishna, being dear to Krishna. And that is true personalism, actually. You know? Any other attempt of being personal will still be under the laws of duality. There will still be that mood of, oh, he's my friend, he's not my friend. I like this person, I don't like that person. You know? Actually, that kind of attempt to be personal is still sentimental somewhat. It's emotional, sentimental. Right? But if our attempts to be personal is established on our relationship with Krishna, then we can be truly personal. And actually, Srila Prabhupada is the perfect example. He was just so personal. He could connect with anybody. He knew how to connect in an uplifting way with anybody, no matter whether it was a small child or some drunkard on the park bench there, or you know some scholar or some politician or some Christian nun or you name it. He knew how to connect with each and every person because he had that vision of seeing everybody as part and parcel of the Lord, as very dear to Krishna, you know? And that's why he could just be so amazingly personal, so caring, reaching out to each and every one he could possibly reach out. Often we hear Prabhupada disciples describing that, how Prabhupada was just so personal, you know? Yes, and everybody... It's almost a little bit like in the spiritual world, you know, in Goloka Vrindavan, everybody has the feeling of, he's my Krishna. You know, that, I forgot the Sanskrit name. There's a term for this mood, this rasa, my Krishna. So, and also the similar thing, everybody had that feeling towards Prabhupada, my Prabhupada. You know, everybody had that feeling. I have a very unique and special relationship with Prabhupada because Prabhupada could almost expand himself, you know, in unlimited Prabhupadas, like Krishna could expand himself. So that comes when we are truly personal, you know, when our personalism is actually based on our relationship with Krishna. Then it is absolute personalism, true personalism. So once again, we can discover how this chanting actually is truly the solution for everything. You know, often we say this when somebody has a problem, we say, yeah, just chant Hare Krishna Prabhu, it's all right, just chant Hare Krishna. And often it's a little hard for us to accept this. And of course, while we are not quite there yet to have that vision, we do need some intermediate solutions also. But then again, in a forum like this, in a holy name retreat, we can actually more deeply understand that, yes, it is really like that. That the holy name alone is everything. Everything falls into place if we actually get on deeper levels of chanting. Where am I? Wrong page. Yes. So, I mean, we can summarize this day today by understanding that actually adding the awareness of a relationship with Krishna to our chanting, this has such a transformational power by adding that first the relationship. This can really transform our chanting from a mechanical, dry duty, oh, so boring, oh, my God, I've only chanted 2 rounds, oh, I've got 14 more to go, how will I survive? You know, from that mood to actually my time with Krishna, right? When we add this aspect of relationship, that really has a very transformational effect. All of a sudden, this becomes my special time with Krishna. And I don't want anything to interrupt this, right? Yes. I don't allow anything to come in between there, between me and Krishna, when I have this supper time. I mean, just our exercise this morning, seeing how it is not so easy to mindfully turn towards Krishna, even here in our Bhajan Kutir, on our holy name retreat, not so easy. What to speak of, you know, sitting on the bus and going shopping and doing this and that, you know, it becomes very clear, no chance at this point, you know, in our low level of chanting, we have no chance. If we find it not so easy here, what to speak of all the other occasions where we usually chant and do other things? Completely empty capsule, definitely, 100%, 100%. So, but adding this awareness and this mindfulness of Krishna, turning towards him, calling out, I know you're there, please accept me, longing for the relationship. It has to be a deep longing in the heart. You know, so that really has the power to completely transform our chanting. So just before I forget to say it, tomorrow in your japa time, please try and apply this, you know. Then such a holy name retreat becomes even so much more effective, as we were saying. It's all about the experience, you know. So of course, if you will not apply and you just do your usual thing there, you know, then you will not get so much out of this retreat. But if you really try your best to apply it tomorrow and the day after, and not only here, but in the next so many weeks and months, you know, but especially tomorrow, you know, when we chant, when you all have your japa time, then please try and apply this. Put this aspect of relationship there, mindfully turning towards Krishna. And I'm sure you will see the difference, you know, that makes our chanting lively and personal, and it becomes my time with Krishna, actually. Yes. Yes. Yes, also, you know, let us remember, really, this Kali Yuga impersonalism is actually constantly increasing. So much. Life is getting more and more impersonal, especially also with these social networks. We may think this expands our ability to be personal or something, but no, it's just the opposite. I've seen how people sit just for hours with their phone, completely ignoring the people around them, you know? They have no relationships with people around them, just chatting with people on the other side of the world who they may have never even met, you know? Very impersonal way of associating. Yes, yes. I mean, I know even married couples. They write each other SMSs from one room to the other. Yes, yes. That's the only way how she can get his attention, by sending him a message glued to the computer or the smartphone or whatever it is. Yeah, yes. So we may think this expands our ability to relate to people, but no, it does the opposite. Especially also Facebook. It's a well-known fact that Facebook brings about some disabilities of building relationships. Yes, yes. It is a recognized disease. FAD, Facebook Addiction Disorder. Yeah, no, I'm not joking. It's true. It's true. Yes. Once Nirmala Swami had a whole article on his website about this, and that's where I know it from. Yes, it's a proven fact that people lose, you know, there's all psychological terms, I don't know the terms, but people lose the ability to actually build relationships. Because on through internet and Facebook, it's all so artificial and lofty and not real, not tangible. And that leads to severe psychological disturbances, to loneliness. Yes. And there is even discovered that there's a connection between Facebook and suicide. They just don't know what comes first, whether suicidal people are attracted to Facebook or whether Facebook makes people suicidal. They're not quite clear in that. But there's definitely a connection. Definitely. So these things are actually alarming. What we think is all progress, you know? It's actually not, really. This is how the dull-headed Kali Yuga person will come about, through all this modern technology. Yes. I mean, it's described in the Bhagavatam how dull-headed and crazy the Kali Yuga person will be. And these technical progress is accelerating it. It's really promoting it. And I mean, as devotees, you know, we have to learn to look through these things a little bit. You know, we shouldn't just get sucked in into all these things. Yeah, we have to look a little through these things and understand that this has so many negative side effects. It may have some tiny little plus point too, definitely. You know, you can announce events and. But this is just 5% is the positive part. And the rest is the negative part. So these things have to be used with controlled senses and mind. Otherwise, we get completely sucked in. Completely. Yes. So it's a big topic, really. But I keep completely away from these things. I also said I don't even have a mobile phone. Not even an old, clunky, old-fashioned one. I don't have any. And Facebook, I'm not active at all in it. I do have a Facebook page of my institute. Somebody else posts things there for my diary. And sometimes I check what's going on there. But I'm hiding. I'm not making it a personal web Facebook site, but it's the Facebook site of the Institute for Spiritual Culture. And then I'm not bombarded with all these shallow, you know, comments and, I just don't have the time. I don't have the time. I rather connect with people around me. I'm through and through a personalist. I spend a lot of time one-to-one with people. That's how I like to spend my time. Not on Facebook chatting away with people on the other side of the world. No, no, no. We need relationships. I mean, the soul is craving for relationships. And of course, the ultimate relationship is Krishna. But Krishna is not alone. You know, Krishna is surrounded by all his loving associates. And there are so many relationships there. You know, so the soul is crying and longing for relationships, for pure relationships. Not based on sense gratification, but based on service. So, you know, this thing of just sitting, lying on your bed with your smartphone, you know, and communicating there, it's completely artificial. It is sickening. It brings psychological disturbances, depressions, you know? Yes, yes. And there is no exchange of service, no commitment, right? You're just chatting along, and when you're sick and tired of it, you switch it off, close the computer, finished. There's no commitment in service, no exchange in service. Completely artificial, very shallow, you know? Yes. And for some people, maybe it may seem more comfortable, you know? You don't have to commit, you don't have to serve. It's all really non-committal, just chatting away. You know, but the soul, even the heart, everybody suffers actually, you know, because it's not according to what human nature needs. You know, we need trusting, reliable relationships where we serve each other according to etiquette, and you know. But over internet, I mean, I've seen it how some bhaktas. You know what, over internet you can say any damn thing to anybody. You know, some bhakta can say some ridiculous thing to a sannyasi. You know? And yeah, because the distance is there, you don't even realize how inappropriate it is. You know, so often people post things which they would never ever say to the person if they would be in front of that person. You know, once I saw one bhakti in writing to her sannyasi guru, sleep tight. You know, sleep tight, Maharaj. Hare Krishna, you know. I mean, my God, you know. Yeah, but these things are going on, you know. Yeah, you understand sleep tight? Well, it's some slang way of saying good night, you know. Sleep tight, sweet dreams. You know, something like that. Would you say to your guru, oh, sweet dreams, Guru Maharaj? Oh, I don't think you would, you know. Inappropriate. But over Facebook, you can post any damn thing, you know, and make some smile there and all this kind of stuff, you know. Really inappropriate. Yes. Yeah, so all these things sneak in, you know, and we think it's all cool and fart and everything like that, you know. Yes. So in any case, yeah, I like to take this opportunity just to shed a bit of light into these things, that we are a little mindful and we don't go along with any Kali Yuga trend in fashion, you know, but that we look a little deeper and we decide, do I really want to invite this into my life? And what kind of, you know, effects may it have? Is this really what Prabhupada would like? You know? So we have to, you know, see things a bit deeper and make some conscious decision. And not just unconsciously follow any trend, any Kali Yuga thing, any fad, how we say in English, you know. Yes, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. And we invite so many Kali Yuga trends which are very detrimental to our spiritual progress. And they're time thieves also. They steal our time like anything. You know, and no surprise that people don't have time to take Prabhupada's books and read. You know, not surprising, because the time slips through your hands with these things. Internet, you can just browse and look up this thing and YouTube that thing and all kinds of kami things there you find, and oh, so interesting. You know, and the whole afternoon is gone. It's gone. You know, and people don't even realize. I mean, that's why many companies and also many universities, they block Facebook, you know, access on their premises, because they have that experience that people become completely addicted and sucked in, and they forget all their duties and responsibilities and just become a tool in Facebook's hands there, you know. Yes. Apart from the fact that, you know, usually, I mean, I talk about this in my False Ego book, how people post always pictures of themselves. This really feeds the ego like anything. Completely detrimental to spiritual practice. And I remember when this Facebook came out and some devotees were saying, oh, have you seen this yet? Look at this. Just looking at these pictures, oh, it made me sick. You know, what people post there. The ladies all with open hair and this and that and all kinds of, you know, cool positions. And, oh, my God, you know. And there's a whole competition there, you know, who can post the more far out and exotic picture of themselves and something really unique and which nobody has ever seen yet. And just so you get a like, you know, people click these likes and, oh my God, you know. I mean, it's sad how people spend their valuable time, you know. Yes, yes. So I'm simply saying this to shake everybody up a little bit and give some food for thought here. There's also this joke, you know, there's two jokes. Somebody dies and there's the funeral, and at the funeral celebration there's only three people there, you know. And then one of the three people says to the other one, where is everybody? I thought this person has, you know, 7,000 friends on Facebook. Where is everybody? You know, so that's what these friendships are like, you know. Completely uncommitted and, you know, and all right, that person is gone. Thank God I have so many more friends on Facebook. You know, one more or less doesn't make any difference. Or then the other joke is, oh, what's your favorite book? Facebook. We should say, what's your favorite book from Prabhupada's books? You know, Facebook. Yeah, so we have to be a little, you know, we have to be a little introspective and yeah, look through these things and not just allow any damn thing to enter our life and steal our valuable time and occupy the space in our minds, you know. But one little addition to the fact that this pure chanting establishes our relationship with Krishna, you know, as we were saying this morning, if we actually really spend 2 hours every day turning to Krishna, calling out to Krishna, surely something will happen in this relationship. Actually, this relationship will become tangible reality for us. And as this relationship becomes tangible reality, the so-called reality becomes more and more like the nonsensical stage performance, how Prabhupada says. Life in the material world is a nonsensical stage performance. So there's actually really a shift of realities going on, right? Sometimes I think I have heard it also here already, but the other day in Zagreb at the Sunday program I also heard it, that sometimes people say, yeah, but what about life in the real world? You know? So, and I'm always immediately interrupting, what do you mean real world? Real reality? No, this is not the real world. Krishna and your relationship, that's the real world. That's actual reality. So people, naturally, when we come to Krishna consciousness, this is what we see. That's the real world. That's the reality, we think. And, oh, my relationship with Krishna, pretty lofty thing there, somewhere far away, something, you know. But then as we chant deeply, there is a shift happening that our relationship with Krishna becomes actual reality. That becomes the real world we are living in. And everything else around, it's just the crazy circus where we just somehow have to function for the sake of being in this material world. But it's not the real world. No. The real world is me and my relationship with Krishna. And as we said already several times, that's what we are keeping at the time of death. You know, the so-called real world, curtain is closing, show is over, it's all gone, everything is gone. Has no significance anymore, no meaning, nothing. All an illusory dream world. And the show is over. That's how it is, you know. Yes, so and then, the more we are deeply established in eternal reality, then we can actually become truly tolerant. Because we can find shelter in my relationship with Krishna. That is quite a profound point, you know. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam. I have the number here, 11:22:61. Where it says that actually only a pure devotee who has shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, he can only be truly tolerant. Nobody else. That's why munis and yogis, they're not so good in tolerating. They usually get very angry and explode and all that. But if we are firmly established in our relationship with Krishna, then we can escape there. We can take refuge there. We can say, oh, thank God, this has nothing to do with my relationship with Krishna. Nobody can touch that. And then we can take shelter there. And because we take shelter there, that's when we can become truly tolerant. Even if people mistreat us and harass us and curse us and insult us and offend us. But then it becomes simply part of the crazy circus. It will not touch us because we take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet in our relationship with Krishna. Right? You get my point? Yes. And this is actually a very practical thing. I keep this in the back of my mind, that whenever there is something which really annoys me or agitates me, then I try to make these two steps back and say, actually, this has nothing to do with my relationship with Krishna. Thank God. Nobody can disturb that. Nobody can touch that. Nothing can take that away. Different reality. Very temporary reality. Very flickering. So it's got nothing to do with my relationship with Krishna. And we can take shelter there. And that gives us the strength to tolerate so many things. You know? So it's actually a very practical point. Of course, a little bit the relationship has to be established through good chanting. Otherwise, we will not be able to remember that in that moment when we get agitated or angry or upset about something. You know, so a little bit that relationship has to be established through chanting and mindfully turning to Krishna. But once it is a little bit established, we can try and remember that and actually take refuge there. And then things will not affect us so much, you know. We will not take things so personal and get all disturbed and so on, because we realize actually this is just a temporary thing there and it's got nothing to do with my relationship with Krishna. Thank God. Very, very good way to see things. Okay. Well, this is basically the main thing what I wanted to share this afternoon. Let me see if there is some questions already. Some burning hands are going up here. Okay, let's start with Lalita Govinda Prabhu.
So you mentioned now we are talking all the time about the relationship with the Holy Name. Krishna. This is my, how to say, observation that I will give an example, maybe I'm not right.
I think you maybe you are a step ahead of us, but anyway, continue.
So Srila Prabhupada and his devotees, actually these first devotees, they didn't have so much close relationship with Krishna, but with Srila Prabhupada.
Mm.
So for me, relationship with Guru and same time with name, the same area.
You are a few steps ahead of us, as I told you. That discussion, Guru comes Saturday morning. Yes. Just now coming. Yes. But nevertheless, there is still a difference. You know, the difference is that Guru is the via media to Krishna. He's connecting us with Krishna. It's not stopping with Guru. No, it's not. He's the transparent via media. He is Krishna's representative. On Guru, we practice how to serve Krishna. We have to practice somehow, you know? So when our Guru visits, oh, we're all in anxiety, we're running, we're cooking, we want to make things nice garland, everything clean. So that's how we would receive Krishna, right? We're practicing on Guru, how to receive Krishna, actually. How to serve Krishna, how to be personal, how to surrender, you know? So, yeah, because Krishna is far away, that's why we need Guru, and Guru is also far away, that's why we need the good devotees. But ultimately, they're all connecting us to Krishna. And as we, you know, as we connect to Guru and we practice on them, on Guru and the Vaishnavas to serve, parallel, we chant. And we chant Hare Krishna. We don't chant Hare Prabhupada. You know? So the chanting establishes the relationship with Krishna. And it goes parallel. Parallel. And it's not an offense to directly approach Krishna. No, it's not. You know, there's these two tracks are there. You know, Guru and the Vaishnavas, but also Krishna. Yes, that's why we chant the holy name. Otherwise, why chanting the holy name if it was all Guru only? You know, then we wouldn't have to chant the holy name. No, the holy name is giving that direct association with Krishna. But since Krishna is a little far away, that's why we need Guru, and he connects us. And the Vaishnavas connect us with Guru. You know, to get Krishna's mercy, we have to please Guru. To get Guru's mercy, we have to please the devotees. We can't get Guru's mercy without pleasing the devotees. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. Just a little pre-show. Okay, Prabhu. Yes.
Maybe this is also an answer to my question. Because when we are trying to... When I was speaking to devotees saying that relationship with Krishna, they were speaking like, oh, come on, you don't want to be a sahajiya or something. So can you explain me...
Tomorrow.
Yeah, also?
No, hang on. Saturday.
Okay.
Yes. Krishna has put a safeguard in there. Oh, well, if you want, maybe we can talk about it now. So that's the point, what I usually bring up in the last session, that yes, we have been talking so much about, oh, me and Krishna, loving relationship, accept me, please accept me, and. So, but that relationship is not sentimental, it's not emotional. And just to make sure we don't become sahajiyas, that's exactly why Krishna says, not he is my devotee who claims to be my devotee, but he who is the devotee of my devotee. He is my real devotee. So that's the safeguard. You know? Sometimes we can also find this amongst Christians that they say, oh, I've got Jesus in my heart and he tells me everything, what I should do. I don't need anybody. Jesus is there. You know, so very easily we could also become like that. We could fall into that trap and say, oh, well, Paramatma is there. I have a direct connection with Paramatma. It's all there. I know what to do. I don't need Guru or the Vaishnavas. I can be happily in the forest just chanting by myself. It's me and Krishna. So just to make sure we don't fall into that trap, that's why, you know, Krishna says, he who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my real devotee. And my favorite pastime is Panihati Chipped Rice Festival. Right? That is the instruction for those who don't know Raghunath Das Goswami. Or he was not Goswami yet, he was actually a family man. You know, he comes from a very wealthy house. Family, he had a beautiful wife, but he had no attraction to all this wealth and opulence and sense enjoyment. And he always wanted to join Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. But no matter how much he tried to run away, he could not get Mahaprabhu's mercy. And actually his parents, they had employed some guards around the house. And every time Raghunath Das was trying to escape at night, they would catch him and bring him back. So, and then one day, Lord Nityananda came to the area. And he thought, all right, let me get the darshan of Lord Nityananda. So, and then he was saying to Lord Nityananda that he has this burning desire to join Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. But Lord Nityananda said, you stay in your family situation and you just externally, you do your duty, but internally, you cultivate detachment. So then he did that for a while. But then again, he would run off and the guards would catch him and the whole story repeated itself. So, and then Nityananda came again to the area. And again, Raghunath Das was seeking his darshan. So, and then Nityananda told him, you feed all my associates with chipped rice and yogurt. You put this festival on, Panihati. That's why in many temples we celebrate this. Do you celebrate this in Ljubljana? No? Oh, so you should introduce this. It's in June usually. There's Vaishnav calendar. It's marked, Panihati. And usually we celebrate this. We make some clay pots with this chipped rice and yogurt and chipped rice and condensed milk. And you know, we have told the pastime, the story is about the lecture, morning lecture is about the pastime. In some temples, they make a big festival out of it. They make a drama, playing the whole pastime, and. Because it's such an important instruction. Lord Nityananda tells Raghunath Das, you serve my devotees. And Raghunath Das, because he comes from a wealthy family, he has a lot of money. So he buys all these masses of products. Chipped rice, yogurt, condensed milk, banana, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's almost the recipes for it, you know. And there's this beautiful BBT painting, I'm sure you've seen it, you know, where all the people come and they sit on the banks of the Ganges, there's even no room, they even stand in the water, and they all have two clay pots in their arms, one with chipped rice and yogurt, one with chipped rice and condensed milk. And Raghunath Das feeds everybody. And even the shopkeepers come, they hear from the villagers. All the people from the surrounding villages, they all come, they all hear, oh, there's some chipped rice festival, let's go there. I have seen in Bangladesh, it's really like that. As soon as something is happening somewhere, all the people, they walk for the whole day just to take part in some event there, you know. So, and same thing there. Everybody comes, thousands of people. And all the shopkeepers here, oh, you know, we can do some business there. So they all come and offer their products. So what does Raghunath Das do? He buys the products of the shopkeepers and he feeds them the same products back as prasadam. That's how generous he is. You know, he is not discriminating. Oh, he is Nityananda's associate and he isn't, he shouldn't get anything. No, he completely generously feeds everyone and all. And that pleases Nityananda so much that in meditation he brings Mahaprabhu there. And not everybody can see him. Only the close associates of Nityananda can see him. And then they perform this funny pastime. Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, they go through the masses of people and they pinch some little prasadam from people's pots and put it in each other's mouth. They feed each other with that. And many people cannot see Lord Chaitanya and they think, what's Nityananda doing there, walking around, doing some funny things? They cannot understand, you know. So that is the main and big instruction for us, because after that chipped rice festival, then very soon after, Raghunath Das gets the mercy and he manages to escape his home life there. And he goes through the jungle, the back way, and walks 12 days and nights, and then he joins Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. Very nice story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know. So that's the Leela, you know. Because it is such an important instruction, if we want to get Guru's mercy, we have to serve the Vaishnavas. No other chance. That's really the secret of success, actually, apart from chanting, is serving and pleasing the Vaishnavas. We should be obsessed of that. How to serve and please the Vaishnavas. Yes. The longer I am a devotee, the more I realize that that's where it's all at, serving and pleasing the devotees. Yeah, so, you know, Krishna built the safeguard in there that we can't get carried away on the tangent of the holy name and just me and Krishna and. So, but both go parallel, you know. And we always say that, chanting the holy name and service attitude. These are the two tracks on which the train back to Goloka Vrindavan moves forward. You know, and service attitude meaning serving the devotees. So the very neophyte mood is, oh, it's just me and Krishna, or it's just me and Guru. No, very neophyte. And Prabhupada gives this example of a mountain, you know. And the further away you are from the mountain, the more you see the mountain just as some blue mass there. But when you close, you see there's all different entities there. There's little hills, there's trees, there's animals. There's so much life there on the mountain. So, and Prabhupada gives this example in regards to being far away or close to Guru and Krishna. You know, the closer we are to Guru and Krishna, the more we see that there's so many associates there around them. And we serve them. But when we are far away, we don't even see them. You know, we only see one big massive mountain there, and we think that's Guru or Krishna. But we are too far to actually see that there's so many confidential associates there, you know. And to serve them is the secret of success, you know. Yes. I wanted to keep that for Saturday. But no harm, then we have a little bit more time on Saturday for other things.
So when we are developing our relationship with Krishna through japa, we will get this taste for serving Vaishnavas.
Yes, that's what we said yesterday. One, you know, effect of good chanting is that we want to serve, you know, inspiration to serve. And it also goes the other way. The more we serve, the more we feel inspired to chant also, you know, and the more we chant, we feel inspired to serve, like that. Yeah, the two simply go parallel, you know, service and chanting. Yes, and relationship with Guru and the devotees is parallel to relationship with Krishna. You know? Yes. Any other question? Yes? Did you have a question? No, just some stretching. All right. Well, before... In the corner, yes. Hiding behind the loudspeaker. Leaning on the wall, yes. Okay.
Okay. I'm just wondering, before you said that we should establish this personal relationship with Krishna, then the externals, so the people when they come and they serve us, we are very much tolerant to them, because we know that this is external, this is that has nothing to do with a relationship with Krishna. So how to understand when we hear that others reciprocate with us, or like are the, how to say, representatives of Krishna in some way. They're giving us some lecture in life. So Krishna is communicating with us through these people.
Yes. So what's the question?
The question is how to...
You feel there's some contradiction or something?
Yeah, I feel like it's some kind of contradiction. Like, how to understand this? That we should not be disturbed by people outside, because we know we are tolerant, that these people have nothing to do with our relationship, and in the other side, that the people are like representative of Krishna. They are giving us some lecture or something.
Some lesson.
The Krishna is communicating with us.
Well, the tolerance is there in situations when we are neglected or mistreated, like Haridas Thakur, Prahlad Maharaj, they're always the famous examples of tolerance. So why could they be so tolerant? Because they were firmly established in their relationship with the Lord. And they could take refuge there. Right? That's why Haridas Thakur could tolerate all that beating. In fact, you know, actually Mahaprabhu came and accepted that beating on his back. Huh? That's how the story goes. You know, that actually Mahaprabhu later, he shows Haridas Thakur, his back, and there's always some beating marks on it. And Haridas Thakur is shocked, and then Mahaprabhu reveals to him that he actually came and protected him, and he accepted the beating on his back. And when Haridas Thakur heard this, he fainted in ecstasy, you know. So that is one thing there, but then it's not a contradiction. At the same time, you know, we also see every situation with Krishna in the picture. There must be some reason why Krishna is giving me this situation. What is Krishna trying to teach me? You know? And we take shelter in my relationship with Krishna. Taking shelter in my relationship with Krishna doesn't mean that we reject and ignore and condemn everybody around or something. No, both. You know? We take shelter in my relationship with Krishna, but at the same time we understand not a blade of grass is moving without Krishna being in control. So obviously there's some reason why Krishna puts me in this situation. At the least just to teach me to take shelter, you know, and become tolerant. And maybe some other things also. So there's no contradiction.
Thank you. I just
needed
this clearance.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Okay, so before we move on to a little bit of Prabhupada reading, and maybe also we want to sing our theme song one more time, but I also would like to request you to turn to your neighbor and share with each other the realization of the day. Empty medicine capsule. What's your realization? What are you taking out of this day? Please share. Hopefully something. So please turn to your neighbor, just 2-3 minutes, and share something. Hare Hare Om. Hare Hare Om. You're so eager to share. You don't even want to stop. Okay, so I really hope that this day gave you a lot of new insights and realizations. So now, who can we invite to lead us in Sri Kevalastikam? I don't really know who likes to sing it and who knows how to sing it nicely. No, I mean it's a question. You have to know the song well. Otherwise, you know, you can't really connect when you sing it if you get all stuck with the words and you can't find the keys and so on. So do we have anybody who knows the song, who has played it many times or something?
She can sing, and maybe Jagat Prasutra can play harmonica.
Yes?
Yes.
Shall we try that?
Mm-hmm. She has to remember to
mention. You can also
Have you played the song before? No.
He's a musician.
Well, musician is not really such a good qualification for kirtan. We will discover this. This is almost one of the so-called obstacles. Anyway, let's not use the term musician, you know. But I mean... Mataji, you would like to sing it?
I can try, but I will never play it. I only know the melody.
She cannot play on harmonium.
Yes, but you have sung the song many times, or few times. Okay, so let's try. Okay, so let's set up here.
Thank you.
So now we come to the last part. Some little bit of reading of about Prabhupada. But before I want to read you the story, we have to quickly look at one more little section from our materials. And I want to share one story which exemplifies the little analogy you find at the end of lesson 4, where it says the Naam Yajna. Please go to the end of lesson 4. And there is a nice, there's two verses, how this chanting of the holy name, we can understand this as being a yajna, right? We always say Harinam Sankirtan Yajna. So how is this a yajna? There is this nice little analogy from Sri Chaitanya Mangala from Lochan Das Thakur. And there it says, the living entity's ear is like the sacrificial pit, the fire pit, right? And the tongue is like the sacrificial ladle, the wooden spoon. And the sound of Krishna's glories, meaning the holy name, is like the pleasing sacrificial ghee. Right? So the ear is the fire pit, the tongue is the spoon, the ladle, and the sound is like the ghee. So, and then the next verse it says, when the ladle of the tongue pours that ghee of the holy name onto the openings of the ears, the ghee enters the heart. In the heart, the ghee makes the fire of devotion burn brightly. The flames of that fire make the body tremble and the bodily hairs stand erect. Very nice analogy, right? So we can imagine the Maha Mantra pours onto the fire a pit here of the ear, goes into the heart, flows into the heart, and makes the fire of devotion burn very brightly, like we have in the fire yajnas, swaha, we pour the ghee in, and then psh, the flames are shooting up. So that's what happens in the heart. The fire of devotion burns brightly, and actually it burns up all the anattas and gives joy, ecstasy. That's the analogy of the Naam Yajna. So now I want to share a little story with you from the same book where we read yesterday, Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All, where one personality experienced exactly that, exactly how it is described in this analogy. So please hear carefully. The story is a little longer, but there's a few funny things in there, so I thought I'd read the whole thing. And the person who shares this wants to remain anonymous. Yes. So he shares, I first met Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada when I was very young, in class 10 or so. I lived near Navadvip. We had all heard about him from the Gaudiya Master devotees who knew and remembered him. He had gone to the West and transformed jivas into devotees, which is very marvelous. However, there were some village rumors spreading fear about associating with Bideshis, foreigners. They said that many were CIA agents, and that if any Bengali boy went there, they would kidnap him and bring him out of India to the West and force him to marry any Western girl. That was the rumor which was going around. Now it's rather the other way around, you know. Any Bengali boy is dying to get out of India and marry any Western girl. So that's how Kali Yuga advances. So this fellow is continuing. I was trying not to believe these stories. So I went myself to Mayapur to meet Srila Swami Maharaj. He was outside by a small thatched hut, which is Prabhupada's Bhajan Kutir, for those who were in Mayapur, next to where they were building the big Gopuram entrance gate. Prabhupada was standing there. As soon as I saw him, I was attracted. He was so beautiful, so powerful. As I stood watching him, my heart was melting. But I was shy and I could not say anything. I'm sure we have experienced that too, how we become all shy and we can't say anything in the presence of, you know, gurus and so. Then he looked towards me and said, "Oh, who are you?" I told my name, my family's name, and my Guru Maharaj's name. He gave me a deep look and said, "Yes, I would like you to help me in this work of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is the order for all devotees to spread Mahaprabhu's mission far and wide. I want you to preach and train these new Vaishnavas. There will be so many of them." Prabhupada knew. "And I need so many qualified assistants." I felt much affection for him, but I answered, "I'm sorry that I cannot do this now. I'm too young and I don't know how to speak in English." Just as we were talking, two of his students came nearby him. They were very tall and huge, probably Bhavananda and Brahmananda or something, big American bodies. They were tall and huge, and when they saw me, their faces seemed quite fierce. Angry, fierce, you know, frightening. I became frightened. Suddenly, I felt I must run away from there. So, still holding my school books in my arms, I began walking backwards and then running very fast away from there. I ran so fast off the road and into the fields until I finally saw a small pond. With all my clothes on and with my school books under my arm, I jumped into the pond and went underwater to hide. Of course, no one had followed me, and later I came out and took myself home. Dripping wet, school books, clothes. After that, I did not see Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj for many years. I joined my Gurudev's mat as a brahmachari and served there fully. We heard about his extensive preaching far and wide, and we saw his Western disciples everywhere. When I moved nearby to Vrindavan, we regularly saw them, but Swami Maharaj himself was often abroad. Many of us, including myself, wanted to associate and help train these boys, but we were very busy in our own mat and also shy, especially about our English language and our capacity to understand the Western needs and mentalities. Because they are indeed very different, the Western needs and mentalities to Bengalis. It was not until 1977 that again our paths crossed. Swami Maharaj had returned to his Krishna Balaram Mandir, though his health was not strong. He regularly called for one devotee to give him water treatments, water naturopathy treatments, whatever that is. Many times I would accompany him. Usually I tried to help with the cooking in the back of Swami Maharaj's rooms. So for those who's been to Vrindavan, quite a few. So you know Prabhupada's rooms and there's the back rooms. So obviously that's where the cooking was happening, you know. Usually I try to help with the cooking in the back of Swami Maharaj's rooms. But often I would just sit nearby his bed and watch him. He was very glorious, even when he was confined mostly to his bed. In November 1977, that's just before Prabhupada left this world, we were again called to come to him. There were many disciples and friends in his room, although he was not speaking and barely moving. His eyes were closed. As I sat nearby on the floor by his bed, I was remembering my attraction to him, as well as my appreciation for his unlimited service. We knew the prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how in every town and village the holy name would be sung. We knew how Srila Swami Maharaj had fulfilled this prediction. In my heart, I was feeling two strong things. One was how I wished I could be part of his mission, to serve him in any capacity that would assist his preaching. Also, for a long while, I had been having some deep investigations about certain aspects of the Hare Krishna mantra and my personal Harinam sadhana. These were very, very private to me, and I had not even yet asked my Gurudev about them. As I was pondering these thoughts, suddenly I noticed that many of the disciples and devotees had left the bedroom. As I watched, even his private servant was called out. Then, miraculously, I was alone with his divine grace, sitting by his bedside on the floor. As I looked again at him, I saw that he was looking directly at me. His beautiful eyes were peering in deep into me. I was astonished. Then, with a gentle motion of his head and one eye, he requested me to come close beside him. On my knees, I scooted closer to him, and he kept motioning for me to come even closer. Finally, I was right next to his face, and he turned his mouth next to my ear. Then, in the most sublime manner, directly into my ear, he chanted one Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. As the sound vibration entered my ear, it went directly into my heart. It was like a waterfall of mercy and truth, Siddhanta pouring into my heart and flooding me with knowledge and satisfaction I had never before experienced. Immediately, the answer to each and every question and desire I had been pondering was thoroughly answered beyond my imagination. The essence of the name was injected into me by him, and at the same time I felt great inspiration to serve him, especially with his Western devotees. So in this mysterious way, I am also considering myself a disciple of Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I feel honored to be able to serve him in any way I can. I am so deeply indebted to him. I pray that I may be engaged in his glorification and his service forever. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Pretty nice story, isn't it? Exactly illustrating this Nam Yagya analogy, you know? How just this one Maha Mantra Prabhupada chanted in his ear, was going in his ear, down in his heart, and just flooding his heart with deep satisfaction and mercy and truth and Siddhanta and everything you can imagine, you know? Yeah, pretty proud. And it's also a nice example how Prabhupada was just so personal, you know? He did not think in terms of, oh, he is my disciple and he's not my disciple, actually. He was beyond that. And he could understand that boy's desires and just answer it to the fullest satisfaction just a few days before he left this world, you know? Very nice. Yeah, you have to get this book. There's so many amazing stories in there, you know? Really. Yes. Okay. 5 to 6, we may as well start with our kirtan. And again, we depending how long the kirtan leaders want to lead, usually we have two kirtan leaders in the last kirtans. And again, we want to apply what we discussed. You know, that not only the kirtan leader, but especially the kirtan leader, but everybody really consciously tries to turn to Krishna, connect, call out, Krishna, I know you're there, please accept me, longing for the relationship. This is what we want to try and apply in the today's evening kirtan. So basically, you know, today we were more unpacking what it means to be attentive on the level of the heart. Yesterday we were introducing helplessness, crying out in helplessness, but now we are unpacking more. You know, and the first element is that we turn towards Krishna, call out to him, appeal to him mindfully, knowing that he's there. Right? And tomorrow we will discuss the second tool, the second main tool. So that's what we want to apply. So who can we invite to lead tonight? I will once again need your help here in two persons. I mean, if we have had everybody who is a little bit more practiced in leading, we can also just stick to those, you know, few people. It doesn't have to be every evening a different person or something. Because the evening kirtans, they should be a little special and more deeper, and they should be led by people who have a little bit of practice in doing the service of guiding, of serving the devotees in this way, of leading them through the kirtan, you know, how it builds up and accelerates and so on. So it does require a little bit more practice, you know. So since I really don't know you, how you are singing.
They're all here.
Huh?
They're all here.
Well, I mean, what's your name, Prabhu?
Marco.
You were once singing on the very first evening. So maybe we'll start with you again. Yeah, because I mean, it's not a performance. No need to clap. Clapping we do in the opera house, you know, and in the theater, but not in kirtan, you know. That immediately invites the performance mood. So yeah, why don't you lead the one section, you know? And then who can be the second person? Huh?
Mother.
Who is that?
She was playing now, the song.
Okay. You also have a little bit of practice? And yes? Okay, well, I mean, I don't know you, you know. I just want to make sure, because sometimes people think, oh, yeah, I have practice, but then, you know, you can feel there's people are not connecting and. Huh? You know, that's why I'm asking you. Okay, good. So then maybe Marco Prabhu starts for the first 40 minutes or something, and then you take over, and we have again Prabhuji there accompanying you and the harmonium. That worked out quite nicely for the... Huh? Oh, okay. Well, that's even better, because usually it's better when you play yourself. And yeah. Okay, good. Good. Fantastic. Good. We'll do like that. Thank you. And then after the kirtan, please all remember we still want to continue the Maunavrata until tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning you're allowed to speak again. Okay, Alexa.